This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 828, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
This river that we ride has always been alive. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. This river that we ride will roll on when we die. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. And this love between you and I is older than that burning ball of fire up in the sky.
Hey, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 828. 828. I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm here with my host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello. Hello.
You okay, buddy?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been awake for a very short time. Hello.
Connor owns the world record for 828 bees in a bee beard. I don't know if people know that.
That is true. That's a college.
I feel like you and I are two of the most unlikely people to ever attempt a beard of bees.
Oh, I would never do that. That's crazy.
Right.
People who do that are crazy, in a good way.
But it just occurred to me that like somebody would look at that and go, I should try that sometime. And you and I are not those guys.
No.
No. No. No. No. You're not a bungee jumper.
No, I'm not a bungee jumper.
Would you skydive?
I would do that. I feel better about the parachute.
I would do that before I would bungee jump.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. The bungee jump seems insane.
I can't say I would do it.
Maybe when I'm older, like George Bush did it when he was like 90 or whatever. What do you got to lose?
Well, I feel like at that point, when the straps pull back on you, all your bones would just burst.
Right, just...
snap, just turn to dust. Yeah, that reversal of inertia is no good. Anyway, we are iFanboy, and every week one of us picks our books, and we investigate ourselves internally. There's a lot of self-reflection going on here you may not be aware of. I think I just learned something about Connor.
Well, you know, my brother jumped out of a plane.
I could see that. Your brother, I could see being picked for a government program, like to become like a Jason Bourne type character.
That's true. And we would never know it.
Right, exactly. Exactly the thing. And like, you know, it'd be fine. And I'd believe it. And he would be the best there ever was at it. And then he would just come back and teach classes. And
especially if it was involving Warcraft 3 combat strategy tactics. Ugh,
fucking deadly. He should have done tournaments. He could have made a living. Either that or
bad. There's a whole army here.
it was anyway, a long time ago, and we were like very bad at that game, and he was very good. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best in their stack of comics. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week. We talk about the patron pick. We answer some listener mail if we have time. Your spoiler warning is this. We've warned you about spoilers. So you're on your own after that. Connor, you had the pick.
I did, and last time I had the pick, I was a plethora of choices. I had a wealth of great comics to choose from. It was a difficult decision. This week was the opposite of that. It was a light week, and when I finished my comics, I said, well, there's really only one book I really liked, and that was Maestro World War III, number 3, which is not a knock on the book. We've been talking about this series of miniseries about Maestro, and they've been terrific. So this is not a knock on the book. It's just it didn't have any competition this week. Written by Peter David, drawn by Herman Peralta, Jesus Albertoff on colors, and Ariana Mar on letters. And we're getting close to the edge here. This is issue 3 of what I assume will be 5 of the third of 3 Maestro minis leading up into Hulk Future Imperfect, the classic early 90s Hulk story by Peter David and George Perez. And this has been incredibly fun and insightful in that you read this book and you wonder why Peter David isn't being hired to write more Marvel comics.
It seems like a no-brainer.
He knows the universe incredibly well. He writes really fun, exciting, action-packed, but also character-driven books. He digs deep into Hulk. I mean, you know, he wrote Hulk for years. He was the seminal Marvel Hulk writer. So he digs deep into Hulk history with these stories. There's a great collection of characters that not only involved in giant bombastic fights, but really fun character-driven scenes. At this point, you have Dr. Doom and Abomination and Namor and Jim Hammond's Human Torch all teaming up to try to take down Maestro. And we know they're not going to be successful, but they don't necessarily know that either. There's a great scene here where after Namor's wife and child have been killed, they're all in Latveria and they're just drinking Doom's cellar empty with Abomination because they're just so depressed about the world and their families. I love the Toro reveal, which we had a couple of issues ago, but here a couple of characters find out that Toro is the right-hand man of Hulk. And it's just been terrific. And on top of that off, Herman Peralta continues to be really great. I don't know where he's been before, but I hope he does a lot more after this run is over, because his art on these miniseries has been just top-notch. Really great, action-packed, character-driven. And then there's a fun, really, really fun, super gushy cliffhanger in this issue with a terrific Imperious Rex shouted from the top of a giant sea monster as it's coming towards Maestro. And I didn't realize before how Namor's little mustache makes him look like an old Clark Gable yelling at the top of a sea monster.
I thought it was funny because I was like, what makes you think that this monster is going to be the one that is just slightly bigger than the last one?
It's a lot of blubber.
It's cool as shit. It's some Jack Kirby monster, like sperm whale leg thing.
Right. I thought it was going to be like the Kraken or something.
Yeah, you're right. It's hopeless. Yeah.
Like he went down deep into the sea to get his trump card, his secret weapon. And I was like, oh, it must be the Kraken because that's the fabled sea monster of yore. And instead, it's this giant, like, not shark man, but maybe whatever it is. It's got a giant tail. Whale shark man. But the Hulk's going to fly right through that thing.
Yeah.
The first scene in the next issue is going to be him
in moments
punching through the stomach and coming out the back.
Namor. For one thing, the whale is a sea. It's a sea animal, and he's on land. So right away, you're at a disadvantage.
Right.
I was unsurprised to see that this was your pick, because, it was a really light week. It wasn't even that the books were bad. I actually really enjoyed the comics I read this week. I kind of expected to sit down and just kind of slog through them, but I actually read Extra at the end of this week.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, I must have more comics to read somewhere, because I was actually really enjoying them. But I don't know what I would have done with Pick of the Week. I didn't really think about it.
I didn't read a ton of bad books. It was just a bunch of books that I enjoyed, but they were fine. Yeah. But there was nothing like great other than this one.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with just we're nearing the end of this journey, you know. This has been a really fun journey with these characters in this world. And I'm looking forward to revisiting Future Imperfect when it's over. And
I kind of like that, like, you know exactly what... It's one of those things where you know exactly what's going to happen, and you're okay with it. The interesting part is the machinations of these people always going. And, I mean, it's Godzilla, really.
Yeah.
It's Godzilla's always going to win. And you see them like, we got this big plan. And you know they're not going to beat Godzilla. And in this, they're not going to beat Maestro. They're just not. And you just wait to watch them fail. And it really is, I mean, it's a type of story that is like an inversion on what we expect of a story.
Right.
And it makes it fun. In that way, it is not predictable, because it's not about the end result. Yeah, you're not kidding about this artist. Just perfect two eras striding in the art. You know, like, doesn't look like old-timey art, but does enough. You know, that you go, oh, yeah, I can see how this would have fit in either era. And then the production on it is really nice. Jesus of Vertov needs the credit for sort of striding that line as well. Modern coloring, but certainly not overdoing it.
Yeah, it's a nice blend.
It's sort of Matt Wilson style.
I love the image on page 12 where the Hulk is reflected in Toro's shiny gold headpiece. It's a very sort of impressionistic Hulk.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's pretty.
It's a really nice image.
I was looking exactly at that page. Exactly at that page when you said that.
That helmet's got to be uncomfortable, right?
It's funny, they said he was Toro, and I was like, that feels like a stretch. Because he's dressed like this old-timey Flash Gordon vassal.
Right.
I just thought, whatever, that's fine. But it's such a ridiculous costume. Like, as soon as you take it out of the context of the story, you know, he's in the Hulk. Was Hercules the Maestro before?
Yeah, Hercules was
he wasn't called Maestro, though.
I don't remember.
Was he called Maestro?
It was 3 miniseries ago.
Well,
maybe.
It kind of made sense that he had that crazy outfit on.
Yeah, because he's Greek gods.
And now as we move forward and he sort of sits in a room with Rick Jones and all the people look, you know, relatively, I don't know, maybe not normal, but it looks ridiculous. The big robe.
I think that was a good scene too, where Rick Jones is just sort of staring at him and he says, Toro? These characters all have the weight of history on their side too. You know, there's old grudges, old alliances, and a lot of it just falls to the wayside because Maestro is such an unstoppable force. Because he is the strongest there is, but also pretty much the smartest there is, too. And so, what are you going to do? But I'm looking forward to the rest of this miniseries. This has been great. If you haven't read this, please go check out these minis. You don't even need to have read it. Josh has never read the original mini.
No.
You don't need to.
or Peter David Hulk, for that matter.
Right. Neither have I. But it's been great. This is a great deep dive into Marvel. I love this Namor. All the characterizations are just terrific in this. Let's talk about Friday. I assume you don't read Friday anymore.
No. No, I forgot about it. Is this the one that's the Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or something?
No, this is, well, no, this is Encyclopedia Brown. This is Ed Brubaker, Marcos
right,
Martinez.
That's it. That's close.
Panel Syndicate book with Munza Vincente, and this is their modern take on Encyclopedia Brown, which is a book I loved as a kid. And this is one of the better issues, but the problem is I don't even know when 4 came out. It was so long ago that I don't remember the details of the mystery or even the characters' names. And I know Lancelot Jones is the Encyclopedia Brown character only because his name is in the title of the story. But it's hard for a story like this that requires you to remember people and details and clues when, I mean, I don't, when did this book start? Was it 2 years ago? I don't even remember when.
I have no idea.
I'm sure it reads great altogether. It's just that it's hard in a serialized format to keep track of things like this when it's so infrequent, which is a bummer.
So why are we talking about it?
Because this was a great issue, like the issue itself, okay. Where, you know, we're at issue 5 and the mystery is coming together. And I just said the clues are hard to remember, but in this particular issue, the girl who was Lancelot Jones' sidekick, you know, he's dead. So she's trying to figure out who killed him, and he's left her this case book, and she figures out in this issue that all the cases in this book are related. And so it's like you don't need to totally remember the whole thing because she goes through the case book and figures out what's going on with each case and how they're related and why they're related to the murder of Lancelot Jones. So the issue itself is great. And the art from Marcos Martín is exquisite. It's sort of European style. I mean, it's not even like his Marvel work. It's very different. You know, he draws this whole lived-in world, but he's got these great panels that lack backgrounds that he uses as emphasis, and it's just beautiful stuff.
So do they email you when there's a new one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I can't keep track of them like that.
I get an email from Panel Syndicate whenever they release a book.
I must be going to spam or something because I just don't tend to see it. But I didn't love that first issue, so I'm not super upset about it.
I understand. If I sat down and read all 5 of these issues, I'd probably be like, this is terrific, you know? Mm-hmm. I've read a lot of Ed Brubaker this week. I read the newest Reckless book, and he has a story in the new Parker Martini edition. So I read like 3 Brubaker crime stories this week, and so I was on a little Ed Brubaker kick.
I don't remember what Reckless is.
It's his series of OGNs he's putting out with Sean Phillips. They're in the 4th book.
From Image?
They're through Image, yeah. Huh. They're all PI stories and set in LA in like the 70s.
I think I really liked that first one.
Yeah, there's been 4.
All right. There.
They've been cranking them out during the pandemic.
Good for them.
Let's move on to... I thought about this book for Pick of the Week.
Yeah, of course you did.
I thought about it. G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, Saturday Morning Adventures number 3 from Eric Burnham and Dan Schoening. And this issue featured a commando squad of Joes going to rescue Duke, who's been kidnapped by Cobra. If you recall, Cobra Commander has the power of a genie, and he's used 2 of the 3 wishes to attack the world. And 2 things I really liked about this issue. 1, we talked about this during the lockdown when there was no books. We were covering the G.I. Joe cartoon. I really admire Cobra's commitment to building giant Coliseum-esque stadiums wherever they are. I mean, it's a huge waste of resources.
It's important for a sense of camaraderie and also the threat. It's the implication.
Oh, sure.
It's the implication that you can end up in there.
You could interrogate Duke in a little interrogation room with a, you know, the double-sided mirror and all that stuff. Or you could do it in a giant coliseum with 10,000 Cobra troops staring at you and then some monsters coming in to fight you.
It does offer a glimpse into the megalomania of Cobra Commander. Like, he doesn't think, boy, if this doesn't go well, I'm going to look really stupid. And then despite thousands of lessons to the opposite effect, he's like, nah, this time I really am the best. And I'm not going to be made to look a fool again. But he is. And he will be, and it's fantastic.
Look at the artisans, the stone workers. Like there's a cobra
100%.
Over the back of the throne. Like, these guys are craftsmen.
Well, do you think it's all like, is it like a TV set? Like, it looks kind of cool, but don't press on it too hard? Or is it like real, you know, like the work that's going to stand the test of time? I don't know. This issue has everything that I could want out of what this comic is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Every time I turned a page, I was like, this is delightful. However, it is specifically for me and you. And yeah. anybody, right now, I feel like I am utterly wasting somebody's time. And and also, and it should be noted, there's nothing original in this whatsoever. This is completely, if this was any other property, I'd be like, this is so lame. But because it so perfectly captures what was great about that G.I. Joe cartoon when we were kids in comic book form, perfectly, I can hear everything. Mm-hmm. The drawings are perfect. They're just not moving. Even, I mean, like the monster that comes out in the arena, I was like, oh, that's from an episode. You know, I have like Snake Eyes versus Storm Shadow on the beach, Quick Kick being the way he is, and then they make fun of Shipwreck. It's every single trope, and it's done lovingly and perfectly. There's nothing original here. I couldn't tell you if this is any good, but I know that it made me very happy, which means it's good. Did the artist hit their intention? Yes. Yes.
The only conceit they made towards the comics and not the cartoon was that so the Strike Force is Quick Kick leading a Strike Force including Shipwreck, Stalker, and Snake Eyes, his S-Men. First of all, Quick Kick would never be leading Snake Eyes. Snake Eyes outranks Quick Kick, but that's fine. We can put that aside. You know, they get up on the beach and there's a little Cobra Strike Force with Storm Shadow and who's the guy in the green? I never remember his name. The guy on the left.
A Water Moccasin? No, was that the name of the vehicle he came with?
Oh, yes.
I had the toy. It was a... I think he's Water Moccasin. And then you got Firefly. Maybe.
And Firefly, then a bunch of Cobra guys. And so then they have Storm Shadow fight Snake Eyes. In the cartoon, there was never any kind of Storm Shadow Snake Eyes thing. They would have had Storm Shadow fight Spirit or Quick Kick in the cartoon. Mm-hmm. Because they just didn't ever really use Snake Eyes because he couldn't talk, so they didn't know how to deal with that. So he was always in the background.
He could breakdance, though.
He could breakdance with the best of them. But sure. They would have had... It would have been Spirit versus Storm Shadow. Or
so could his wolf.
Well, the wolf, yeah.
It was so delightful.
The dialogue is
I was so happy reading this.
Yeah.
Yes. We may have talked about this, and I think we have. The white mark on top of Cobra Commander's helmet, I have always taken to be a shine... But then I always realize it's always there.
No, it's a panel.
Yeah. I don't think the toy had that, though. I think the toy was blue.
Yeah, it didn't have it. It should be a shine. He doesn't need a panel on top of his head. Maybe it is a shine.
I think it was a shine that became a panel. Hmm. That's what I think happened. Because I always took it as shine, and then at some point I was like, wait, it's always there.
There's always somebody shining his helmet.
They have a buffer Viper, and he's always there to sort of polish his helmet, as it were.
So the next issue we have is the conclusion where all of Cobra and all of G.I. Joe are going to fight because the genie has summoned them all to this island and they're all in a row in a classic comic fashion getting ready to fight.
Cobra Commander never knew, he never read a genie story before. So no. He didn't know that this is what always happens.
Can you go down the line and name every G.I. Joe?
Every G.I. Joe?
We're standing on the beach.
All right, let's get to it. Here we go. All right. Double page spread. So I'm going to go left to right. That's easy.
Okay.
I got Gung Ho, Doc, Snake Eyes, Shipwreck, Ace, Beachhead, Duke, Gung Ho. Wait.
Nope.
No, Gung Ho's first. Who's the other Marine?
Leatherneck.
Nice. Rock and Roll, Scarlet, Cover Girl, Mainframe, Roadblock, Bazooka, Lady J, Alpine, Flint, Spirit, and Freedom is flying up there, the Eagle. Ooh, Lowlight.
Yep.
Dial Tone,
mm-hmm.
Quick Kick.
Nice work.
Thank you. Other than Leatherneck, which was really, Leatherneck is a Gung Ho knockoff par exemple. All right, let's see if I can get Cobras. This will be tougher. So Firefly, right away, that I can picture that guy with the purple vest.
Yeah.
Do you know that one? That
No, I don't. I don't know.
Oh, and also getting him mixed up with the other guy who's in the red...
Who's crouching right in front of Dr. Mindbender's crotch.
Yeah, well, there's a cut piece there, so he's safe between that and the helmet. All right, Ripper? No. The middle one's Buzzer.
Yeah.
The one on the right with the leopard skin print is Ripper. Blowtorch is the one with the brown hair, who looks like he was in Motorhead. Zartan, Dr. Mindbender, that other Viper guy, Destro, Cowboy Commander, Major Blood, Baroness, is that Zarana and I don't remember Zartan's son's name.
Xandar.
Xandar?
Yep.
Okay. Tomax and Zaymot. Ooh, the green-headed Dreadnought. That's almost after my time.
Wasn't it something pig?
Don't know. Storm Shadow, being very calm. Crimson Guard. And then there's that Water Moccasin guy again. That was fun for me. We should really move on to the next.
The final page PSA was terrific.
Fantastic.
With Law and Order and animal abuse. Yeah, really good.
Short week, so I was making sure. I always look for something else to read, but this week I was even more insistent of it, and I picked up Dogs of London from Aftershock, written by Pete Milligan by the mono-named Artacita.
Hmm.
The description got me, and it was just like 60s London gangsters, but I actually thought it was going to be, because the cover shows a real dog, and I thought, oh, it'll be like this, but maybe it'll be dogs who just act like normal criminals, you know, like the Cray dogs or whatever. But it actually wasn't. Right. It was a straight up regular 60s gangster story, you know, nothing supernatural or otherwise about it. It wasn't like the best thing, but it was really fun and good. It was exactly, you know, like you can hear what these guys sound like 100% in your mind. Even if you're not from England, you've probably seen a movie with, you know, folks like these. If you ever watched any of the various versions of the Krays.
Right.
And I was enjoying it well enough. And then there's like a time jump that happens where we skip to the now. And I guess it's just a spoilery thing. But basically, you go from the 60s when he's involved in all this criminal stuff. And then you skip and he's being knighted by the prince. And he's like a really successful businessman. He's got a big, beautiful house. And his wife, we saw earlier in it. And there's a thing where basically they dug some bodies up that they'd buried a long time ago. And it's going to be a problem. I really enjoyed it.
That's good.
I was annoyed because it was like, I was like, oh, it's $5 and these are usually not very good, but I'll take it. And I, you know, it was just what I wanted it to be. It was like, this is the kind of stuff, you know, I guess you have to go over to Aftershock and wherever to find these things. Sort of like, what was the mafia doctor, the black doctor for Capone?
Shadow Doctor.
Shadow Doctor. Was that also Aftershock?
Maybe.
It was a really fun book. And I think that when Pete Milligan doesn't delve too far into the crazy vertigo-like sort of darkness and supernatural and fantastic stuff, he's got a great, great ear for dialogue. And it's a really good find. I'm going to make sure I read through this series. But if that sounds like something you would like to read in comic book form, you should check it out. I think the art was fantastic for what it needed to be for these. It's a little tricky to tell the people apart because they're just people and they're all in black suits. And they're a bunch of, you know, white British guys in their 20s, but sometimes like one guy has glasses and the other one has a balding hairline and whatever. But you know, it was good. It was really fun and sort of an unexpected thing this week.
I wanted to mention Batman Killing Time #3. It introduced a new villain called the Help, who is on the face of it an elderly British butler type, but is in fact incredibly good at everything, combat and tactics and all the stuff.
He's Batman's the anti-Alfred.
He's the anti-Alfred. And I liked that a lot. I thought it was a fun villain intro. It felt very much like the first time I read Mr. Zazz and Batman Shadow the Bat #1. And not just because they're both bald, but, you know, he's formidable, especially for a Batman who, in this story, is just starting out. And he knows Batman's tricks. He sees where he's been trained. He's also been trained there, too. And he's like, you're going to be good, but you're not there yet. And he just beats the crap out of him. I thought this was a fun, really fun issue. Really, really good. And I liked the introduction of the Help. I hope he is a villain that sticks around in some form.
I missed this first issue because I just thought it was some other Batman story that I didn't need to pay attention to. And you said you should go read it. And I liked the first one. I liked the second one, but I really, really liked this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, this is my favorite of all of them. And it is really cool to see Tom King so quickly sort of, you know, like he just finished the other Batman story, but he had a very specific tone in this. And this story is completely different. He's taken the character that, you know, the Catwoman that was his main character, and he's got a completely different version of her. And it, you know, it doesn't feel like he doesn't know what to do with this version. He just switched, code switched.
Yeah.
And it's really fun.
Yeah, it's good. Deadly Class 52, we're nearing the end. There's four more issues of this book. Now we're in 2006 with these characters who are, you know, some age, well, they're 30s at this point. I'm bad at math. And Marcus and Maria are settling down into some sort of domestic bliss. They get married here with some of their old school friends as witnesses. in Vegas, but all of that goodness is shadowed by the fact that someone has started murdering their old friends from assassin school. So at the end, we see one of the main characters from that those days get shot and killed by a shadowy figure. And so clearly this last four issues is going to be whoever this person is dealing with the four main characters from the original story. This whole book has been fun. You know, obviously the beginning part was the highlight, the early part of the book, but I've enjoyed it all the way through, and I was not expecting to take these characters this far into their lives, but it's been interesting. It's the kind of thing you can do in a book like this. It's gone 52 issues, and we'll go 56 issues total.
So wait, it goes 56 total, and this was 52. Okay.
Yep.
It's a Rick Remender thing. Like, they go on a lot longer than I can usually hang.
For sure.
Has it been coming out regularly?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. Last issue of One Star Squadron. One Star Squadron number 6, Mark Russell, Steve Lieber. We've talked about this a lot, sort of, because I think we were both kind of struggling with it. And I think it got better. I started to start to get its purpose as I moved along. And I thought that this issue was the best of them. There was a couple of times here where I was reading it and I just was like, there's Steve Lieber. And he's always great. He is. But there was just there's a bit where... And it's totally innocuous, I know. But Red Tornado goes and gets into his car, and it's snowy and icy out. And the way that it looked through his windshield at him with the ice on, I was like, wow, that's good. Like, it's just simple, like, whatever good draftsman stuff, you know, that Steve Lieber does. But I know that he's just such a goddamn technician with his tools that there was just that one bit. And I was like, that looks perfectly like icy frost on there. And it's totally like a lame thing to focus on, but that's who I am. And, you know, it ended up at the end being sort of a treatise on the nature of being a hero. And I think that what they were trying to get at was something along the lines of, like, if you do this stuff all the time, you lose track of what it is you're trying to do. And I'm totally stretching here. You know, if you are a person who's making comic books and you have to keep writing about being a hero over and over again, you start to lose your way and you start to lose sort of what it's about, and it becomes about the adventure. And if you go back to being able to call all these characters heroes, and that's one of those things, like, it's weird. Like, not every single person doing the thing is a hero necessarily. They're not doing something heroic. This is all very metaphysical, but I tend to think that this is where I got with it. But, you know, at the end, I thought that just this issue alone, what Red Tornado goes through and him trying to figure out, he helped somebody who'd done something wrong get away because he thought it was the right thing, and it sort of turns out that it was. He's just examining that stuff all the way through, and, you know, it was thoughtful, and it wasn't particularly funny. They sort of rectified the Power Girl thing because it was way out of line, and she kind of just realized it at the end and, you know, had a conversation with Red Tornado about it. And while I didn't love it, and I don't think it was entirely successful, I don't feel like it was a waste of my time. I enjoyed the ending.
I didn't like this.
Did you read all of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Which is a bummer, because I love Russell, I love Lieber, but it didn't land with me at all, which is too bad.
Are you trying to insult me?
No, I'm glad you got something out of it. I didn't get anything out of it, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Cool. I know that you are excited. But it is time. It's time for Star Wars Corner.
It's been a while.
You told me that this might be the patron pick, and it ended up not being the patron pick. But I said, okay, based on that, I'll go in. And I read Obi-Wan Kenobi. Star Wars : Obi-Wan Kenobi number 1. Story by, I was surprised and happy to see this, Christopher Cantwell, who does stories about egotistical men who overshoot their boundaries and think they know more than people around them and their hubris, but they mean well. That's right.
And it never bites them in the ass.
I was like, that Obi-Wan Kenobi, that works. That makes sense. Art by Ario Anindito, color by Carlos Lopez, and letters by Joe Caramagna. And my takeaway on this doesn't have to be... basically, what it is Obi-Wan is in the deserts of Tatooine. I believe this is probably just prior to episode 4. And he's, you know, he's hanging out. He's keeping his watch. He's trying to see what's up. I don't think he mentions Luke in this, so maybe it's even before that. But he's out living in a hut by himself and you know, talking about the harshness of the storms there or whatever. It was a nice little scene at the beginning. And we flash back to his childhood in the Jedi Academy and another kid there who was his closest friend. And she bolts. She takes off. And he tries to stop her. And then he can't do it, and he comes back, and they have like a little adventure in the streets of Coruscant. And by the way, I've always loved the idea I think this goes back to the Zahn books, is that Coruscant is this like super multi-tiered thing, and the lower you get and the worse it gets. And there's a bit of that in this, and I was made happy by that. You know, it was fine. You know, it wasn't bad. It didn't try to do too much that they shouldn't. It doesn't interfere with anything. It's just a little story about what this dude might have been doing at these times in his life. Campbell's a good writer. I actually really like the art. I think, you know, like the thing about these Star Wars books is that sometimes they can go too far towards, when they're not cartoony, they can go too far towards photorealism, and then it makes it look stiff. And I think this was just right. In fact, the Tatooine stuff, the old man Kenobi stuff, really was beautiful. I thought, oh, this is really great looking, sort of Phil Noto-ish, but a little more organic. And then the stuff that was them kids on Coruscant was a little more cartoony. But I was kind of, you know, the colors. That was a really beautiful book, actually. You know, and this is, of course, in prelude to the Obi-Wan series, I assume. I don't know how much they're related or not. But, you know, I'll read the next one as a sort of standalone, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi story. And the fact is, I don't think I've read a lot of Obi-Wan stories, really. I think that he's always a side character. And when they tell the other adventures, you don't really get to know his. There may be a whole load of prequel type Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan Kenobi stuff out there, but I wouldn't know because I wouldn't eat the filthy motherfucker.
Wait a minute. Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Obi-Wan.
You mean old Ben Kenobi?
Yeah.
Lives over by the Dune Sea? Yeah. That guy?
It was good. I'll read more. It was fine.
So Obi-Wan Kenobi was not the patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy. The patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. Obi-Wan came in second to Twig, number one, from Image Comics, and Scotty Young, Kyle Strom, Jean-Francois Bellieu, and Nate Picos. This was the patron pick voted on by the patrons. And I admire Scotty's ability to continue to find these artists that I've never heard of that are really terrific. And I realize a lot of, not to denigrate Kyle Strom at all, but a lot of what holds his books together is the Jean-Francois Bellieu colors, which keeps all of his books looking of a piece, even if different artists do them.
Jean-Francois is to Scotty as Dave Stewart is to Mike Mignola.
Yeah. You know, this artist is different than the one that did the previous books, but still in that same vein of Scotty Young's style. That said, I don't know who this book is for, but it was not for me.
Yeah, cute, fuzzy animal in a fantasy setting, but he's got a little bit of a day job kind of thing going on. I think you're right. Like, I think I was...
Like, it wasn't bad. I just finished it. I was like, well, that was well done, but I'm just not interested in it.
I think I'm a little more interested in you because I really was sort of turning the page, and it ended a little soon for me. I was like, wait, I want to know what happens next. So that's a good sign.
It was a good cliffhanger.
So I think you're right. I think it's not necessarily for us. I think that there's a fantasy animal thing that has been in Scotty's, you know, milieu through, you know, the Wizard of Oz stuff, all through this. It's definitely, you can see the roots to Wizard of Oz in this. You know, maybe it's for kids, you know.
Well, at first I thought it was a kid's book, but then there was like the butthole thing, and then there was the dead body, so I figured it wasn't a kid's book.
Yeah, but that's what used to be kid stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
when we were kids, you would put that stuff in there. And it would, you know, give it that sort of hint of danger. Other than, I'm like, I wouldn't have a problem giving this to either of my kids.
Well, they're much older now.
I'm trying to remember, I Hate Fairyland was, I think you could have given that to the kids. I think it would have
been. Is Oliver 17 now?
I mean, more or less. He's the size of a 17-year-old.
But the first, like, 10 pages or so, maybe less than that, I thought, well, God, he's doing a kid's book. That's cool. But then I was like, well, is it a kid's book? And then I guess it doesn't really matter.
No, not really. I do think it's definitely an all-ages kind of thing. I think that the character designs are, you know, he's called Twig. He's got a little twig growing out of his head. He's got like a slug that's his friend. You know, the character designs and the world building are excellent.
Yes.
You know, it is all of a piece. These all things look related.
He's good at that.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I think you're right. Like, I don't think you're definitely not the audience for this, but I read it, I think, more with an intellectual curiosity than with a, oh, wow, I can't wait to see what's happening yet.
I mean, I will say that the last page cliffhanger is, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had another issue next to me, I'd read it because just to see what the resolution or at least what happens next. But take away that last page, I was like, okay, I don't really care. But, you know, the last page did get me. This guy Twig it's his first day on the job. It's a very important job in the society.
His dad had the job.
His dad had it. That's how dad did it. And he has to go meet up with this other worker, the Pathsayer. And he shows up and the Pathsayer is dead and been dead for a long time.
He said at some point, like, well, at least there's always a path there, because I know that's a constant. And I was like, oh, that's not good, dude.
He's been dead for a while. He's got flowers growing out of his skull.
That drawing
was great.
Is excellent. The
plants and disturbing.
Yeah, and the there's grass growing out of his knee joint, and
I mean he's been dead so long that his entire fleshy body has rotted away. It's just bones. So it's been a long time.
Yeah, but
his clothes have rotted away.
He might not have clothes though. If you look, everybody else is naked.
Well, there's some like, well, I guess there's straps around his wrists and ankles, and
he's got a huge Flavor Flav medallion. Look at the page before that as you walk through the workshop.
Yeah.
Look at those drawings of this.
Oh no, the artist, amazing.
The art is stellar, absolutely. You know, and the coloring, the lighting in that, like no one is questioning Bilya's coloring at all. But in fact, look at the coloring on that last page where the light from the window actually shines on the body. Wow, that's
Jean-François Bilyeu is one of the best colorists in comics.
Yeah.
Bar none.
Does he do anything other than Scotty's work?
I don't think so. There's bright outdoor sort of fantasy land colors. Everything's very primary colored. And then there's just beautiful light effects throughout the whole book, not just in that final page. There's a, the slug glows while they're inside that big stone creature as the light source. Right. That's colored really well.
That is one of my favorite things about digital coloring that they never used to be able to do, is to replicate the appearance of like illumination on a page.
Yeah.
I love that. I'm always impressed by that sort of that effect, that it looks like it's glowing. There's not. It's just a white and surrounded by dark, and that fools your eyes into thinking it. But that's the coolest thing.
For sure. Like you could have done this. This last page would you could have done it in old flat coloring, but it wouldn't have looked as impactful.
Yeah, the four color.
And I prefer flat coloring, but you know, there's things you can do that you can't do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the more I look through it, like it is an absolutely beautiful book. Like 100% beautiful. It's a 5 across, you know, artwork, storytelling, all that. Subject matter, you know, probably not either of our favorites. But, you know, in terms of setting up a story, building a world, dialogue, like, those all aces.
Yeah, I have nothing negative to say about it other than it's not really my story type. But as a comic, it's completely well done.
So that leads to the question, I'll do it before we get to ratings. Are you going to read the next one?
I mean,
you don't have to.
No,
I'm definitely going to read the next one.
If it's a week like this again, where I've got nothing, maybe, but I don't know.
If it's a week where
I've got 25 books, probably not.
I find the sort of range of stuff that Scotty does to be pretty fascinating, and there's usually always something interesting in there.
Well, look in the back of the book. You know, You just read Twig, and then you got an ad for the Me You Love in the Dark, and then an ad for I Hate Fairyland. And then there was the book he did about bullying. Those are all very different books that he's done in the last two years.
In the Midwest?
Middle West, yeah.
Middle West, that's it.
Middle West is more... I Hate Fairyland, Middle West, Twig, they all sort of exist in the same sort of fantasy fairyland.
Middle West is that fantasy genre, but if Rick Remender had showrunner.
And steampunkier than this. Yeah. I mean, he obviously lives and likes that genre, which is totally fine. Sure. The Me Love in the Dark was straight up horror, and the bullying one was less fantasy fairyland stuff, but he's still all a wide range of story types and styles.
Ratings.
Ratings. Out of 5, ratings. Are you giving it a 5?
Nah, I'll give it a 4.
Yeah, 3. Okay. There you go. Patron pick. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Every patron can vote out of the book to the rundown. We do thank the patrons. They're the ones that keep the show going. They are our main source of support. So we hope to give them a nice experience. You can help directly support the show by going to patreon.com/iFanboy. Our next stretch goal is to add comic book TV coverage to our podcast lineup. Like we would do a Moon Knight show if we hit that stretch goal, or we would cover, maybe I talk about The Flash or whatever shows we're watching. We'd cover that in our podcast, which you don't normally do. We should probably look at our stretch goals and rejigger some stuff and move stuff around. We'll talk about
probably.
That. We give the patrons a monthly hangout, which we hang out with them and on video and talk about nonsense. And sometimes we talk about those comic shows we don't talk about on podcasts and other things. We also give them the patron pick, and they have their powers, and they've got communities on Discord and Facebook. It's a really grand time for them. We hope it is anyway, and we hope you would consider joining them. because they are the ones who keep the show going. You can also help the show by going to fanboy.threadless.com, where you can find our t-shirts and other sundry items with our designs on them, including the most recent one, the Gosh shirt, which I almost wore yesterday. I looked at it and it was in my drawer and I thought, is it a Gosh day? And I didn't really feel like it was a Gosh day, and it wasn't a Gosh day, so I'm glad I didn't wear it.
I'm sorry. Can I have a clarification on what makes a Gosh day?
You know,
is that a shirt that you want to wear if you're going somewhere or not going somewhere? Because it's going to, it could be a conversation starter, which you may or may not want.
Correct. It just didn't have the feeling of a day where you want to celebrate with a shirt like Gosh. Good old superheroes.
Fair.
Ended up being work was a challenge, so it wouldn't have been appropriate for the shirt. I don't want to dishonor the shirt that way.
Okay, I like all that.
FMY.com/support is our digital tip jar via PayPal. If you just want to throw a couple bucks in the tip jar, you can do it there. FMY.com/Amazon is where you can find our Booksplode books, as well as a general Amazon link. And on the Booksplode post, you can find our links with bookshop.org. It's a great organization that helps support independent local bookstores. When you buy books through them, a couple dollars from your order goes to this. You can either designate a specific store to get your dollars, or you can go into a pot that helps stores out equally. It's a great thing. So those are all the ways you can help us. Patreon.com/iFanboy, fmo.threadless.com, fmo.com/support, fmo.com/Amazon, and our bookshop.org links. So thanks to everyone who does that. And speaking of the patrons, those special patrons who give at the $5 or higher level a month get their own superpower live on the show.
David Starnes, or possibly Starnes, but probably Starnes. David Starnes can project to people without doing anything the feeling of approval or rejection. So someone will say something to him and they will infinitely know whether they've been approved and they will feel amazing, or rejected and they will feel terrible. But he doesn't have to do anything. He's completely innocent in this.
Mm-hmm.
But he can like, if you really want that approval, you'll really feel that. There's no there's no subtext to it.
Sure.
So, but it is a full and complete feeling of approval or rejection. You will either be part of it or not.
You feel a warm glow or just a terrible despair.
Yes. Yes. It's not unlike in Gladiator, the thumb up or down.
In Matthew Rosenhagen, I have created my arch nemesis. Matthew Rosenhagen is the pollinator. He can emit pollen of any kind or type to pollinate trees or flowers or the ground, just the air. So he can also, if feeling so inclined, suck all the pollen in that's surrounding him. So he could help me, but mostly he's just my enemy, and I will destroy him. So thanks to David and Matthew, patreon.com/ifanboy. They gave it the $5 higher level, and they got their superpowers live on the show. And watch your back, Matthew. Watch your back.
Wow. I mean, he could help you, though. Wouldn't you want to make...
Sure, he could, but...
You suspect
he won't? I can't take
that
chance.
Right. He's got Rose in his name.
Yeah.
Matthew Rosenhagen. He's almost a comic book writer.
I think we can do an email. I don't know how long the show is. There's been a lot of problems behind the scenes. Nick S. wrote in and said, I discovered Daniel Warren Johnson through your love of Beta Ray Bill and decided to pick up Wonder Woman Dead Earth. Reading them back to back, I found a lot of similarities with not only the art, but with some story dynamics as well. Was there something different that clicked with Bill to make it the book of the year compared to Johnson's previous works? Does it depend on the subject matter story more so than the art? For me, I'll pick up anything Johnson is doing going forward.
Yeah, I can answer this. For me, I can answer it.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes with an artist, especially one who's doing something new or unique, and I don't know that I can put my finger on what that is, but if you read Murder Falcon... It's new and unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got a thing. And sometimes for me, I need a key or a context to have it click with me and why it is good or successful. I remember we tried to read Murder Falcon. I may have read Wonder Woman Dead Earth, but the Murder Falcon was weird. I was like, something's really cool about this, but I'm not quite getting it. I don't think I tried to read the Wonder Woman one because there's been... a lot of Wonder Woman sort of one-shots and things like that, or miniseries, and I couldn't remember any of them were any good, so I probably didn't even take a flyer on it. Beta Ray Bill, on the other hand, you know, it's a property that I'm inherently interested in. it's a character mm-hmm. that, you know, the very, very specific character from sort of a point in our lives when it was the one of the first times where, I'm assuming you're like this, that there's this weird alternate take on a character that we know really well, and it was just interesting. As soon as you see that, if you're a certain kind of comic book fan, as soon as you see that first cover of Walt Simonson's with Bader and Bill on it, you go, what the hell is that? I want to know what that is.
Right.
And so that's enough to suck you in. And then, so given that context, and then given the fact that this guy clearly loved and cared about this character, or at least, you know, understood him in a way that was similar to how I, you know, it all fell together, I think, for me. And so that context is really important.
Yeah, I mean, every story is a combination of story, art, character, and premise. And just because the same person's doing the story doesn't mean it's all equally good.
Mm-hmm.
I read Wonder Woman: Dead Earth. I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
He hit another level with Beta Ray Bill. It was a combination of his art, the story, the character, and the premise. You know, mm-hmm. like Murder Falcon, I think I read a couple issues of, and I liked it, but didn't love it. Not enough to keep going. Wonder Woman: Dead Earth, I read the whole way through. I liked it. It was interesting and new in terms of the storytelling style, and the art was terrific. But everything clicked with Beta Ray Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And his next work may not be as good, and probably won't be, just because Beta Ray Bill was so incredible.
And, well, it's the wrestling story, Do a Powerbomb. I read the first issue. It's pretty good, but I think it doesn't hurt to like wrestling, you know, right. to get to it. If you listen to the talk split I did with him, he was, like, he was pitching and really trying to get Beta Ray Bill. Like, they were like, what do you want to do? And he said, I want to do this. And they couldn't figure out where to fit it in. And so during the time that they were dragging their heels on giving a green light, DC came and said, hey, do you want to do this Wonder Woman story? Mm-hmm. Or a Wonder Woman story? And he was like, bird in the hand.
Yep.
So he went over and did that. He was not pursuing that project.
Right.
They asked him about it, and then he had to think of something to do for Wonder Woman, how he would approach it. He wasn't even familiar with the character. So, I mean, like basically familiar, but not deeply so.
Culturally familiar.
And that's a difference. One's a thing that he was like, I know what I want to do. I have this thing. And the other one was like, hey, do you want to try this? And he went, sure. You know, and they're both going to have his talent in it. They're both going to have his way of thinking, his storytelling. But that's a difference between those things. Now, I should read Wonder Woman: Dead Earth. You know, I'm speaking out of my ass to a certain extent, but it's a good question. But for me, there's always, like, it happens with all sorts of different art. Like, it happens with bands. Like, I will listen to a band for years and you know, or, you know, people will be like, oh, this band's great. And it never quite does it for me. And then you hear a song and you go, oh, okay, I like this. And then you hear what you like and all the other things that came before it, or you don't. You know, like maybe from that point on you like them. It's hard to say. But I usually need some sort of pathway in, because something all on its own, you know, I'm almost defensive about new stuff. I'm like, I don't have room. You know, so yeah. I need a way for it to get in.
Well, Nick says in his email, does it depend on the subject matter story more so than the art? And I mean, you can't separate everything out. That's all the same thing. And so
it's an intangible, though.
Yeah. His art is terrific across the board, but it may be that the subject matter of Bill, and it was sort of a heavy metal gladiator Lord of the Rings type story, his art really worked in that context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, it worked really well in Wonder Woman. It was a post-apocalyptic, you know, hellscape story, so it was appropriate there too, but everything clicked perfectly together with Beta Ray Bill because yeah. of all the factors. And so you can't just pull one out and say, well, the art is the same in every, it's the same artist, but doesn't mean the art's the same. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you could use the same math over with, say, Tom King and Mitch Garrett's. You know, like, Mr. Miracle, well, I loved it. Like, I loved what happened at the end, and I loved how it came together. I have no affinity for those characters. I don't really know. I can't even think of another Mr. Miracle story I've ever read. Other than to be like, oh, Jack Kirby created them, but I've read it. I don't know. You know, when you go and you compare that to the Sheriff of Baghdad or Babylon. I don't remember which one it became in the end.
It was Babylon.
Babylon. Did they change the name? Or am I just making that up?
I don't know. I think they...
Well, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, same guys, same thing, you know. And I liked it. It was good. And they won Eisner's or whatever, but it didn't resonate with me the same way. It wasn't... It's because there were no jokes in it. It was not fun at all. It was very grim. You know, and then you take that on to the other. Like, it's a very specific sort of style and voice. And you know, it doesn't always hit you the same way.
Yeah. Every book is a precious snowflake that's different than the last. And some of them work better than others.
Yeah. And it's art. Yeah. So you take it in how you're going to take it in.
Yeah. But they're all, I mean, I think... I would even go back and read Murder Falcon again because I think he's very good.
He's a singular talent.
Yeah, for sure. And also, talent grows, and you know, like he's
that's true.
Relatively young, so that you know, every book of his that I've read, I've liked more. You know, as they've come along. So, Murder Falcon didn't really connect with me. Wonder Woman I liked a lot. Billy Rabel I loved. He's, you know, getting better.
And there's other stuff in there too that I've kind of forgotten about, but yeah.
Contact@ifanboy.com. That's you can write in. Like, Nick, thanks for writing in. Quick plugs for other shows. Daniel Warren Johnson, Talkslow, Josh just mentioned. This is the last episode of the Talkslow, Josh's bi-monthly interview show. So if you have never read Daniel Warren Johnson's work, or you have and never listened to it, go to check out the Talkslow there. We also had our Media Explode, the TV game. We'll have another episode this month, but last month was the TV game show. We enjoyed that quite a bit. And we just released last week, or the middle of last week, was the Booksplode review of A Contract with God and Other Tenement Stories by Will Eisner, where Josh and Ryan Haupt and I looked at that seminal work. And that was a lot of fun. So you can check those out. This month in May, we'll have our Doctor Strange review, I think this week. I think we haven't recorded it yet. We haven't even scheduled it yet, so don't hold me to it. But the plan is to try to get it out this week. And then the rest of the month, we'll have another Talksplode from Josh and another Media Explode episode. Don't know what we're talking about yet, but those will come out hopefully this month in May.
Tell you what, though. If you are a patron and you are on Discord, write names of people who I should talk to. Now, I have a very stringent
set. Who you'd like to hear.
You'd like to hear. But like, because I've just basically been looking at the lists of people and trying to figure out people I haven't talked to. Now, I have all sorts of reasons for why I would and wouldn't want to talk to somebody, so I'm not going to go through it, but... write stuff down. Go to the patron Discord.
Go to the iFanboy podcast channel
in the podcast section, and just don't you know what? You don't even have to make a case. You don't need to make a case. Just say people who you think would be cool to talk to. I don't mean for this one necessarily. I've been looking through my books lately. I was like, oh man, I've talked to a lot of the people who I wanted to talk to. I want a list. Give me a list.
Some ideas.
Yeah, you never know.
All right.
You can find all of our shows. You can find 101 Talksplodes at ifanboy.com, as well as all the other things in Booksplodes and Media Explodes and all the special editions we did over the years, and all the writing from our talented comic book writing staff, who were each hand-selected.
Artisanal. And it was an artisanal staff.
You know, they really were. We were actually pretty brutal about... not like how we treated anybody, but we're like, this voice isn't right. This is that, you know, like we definitely had a either worked or didn't for our thing. And then sometimes it did, and sometimes it didn't. So after that, you can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out, following @iFanboy on Twitter or @iFanboyComics on Instagram. You can follow us individually at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram or J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy to keep up with the old video show re-uploads. The full-length shows are going to be uploaded. They're all uploaded, and then we're just down to the minis. And we'll be done with those pretty soon. This past week, there was Tim Sale, Black and White. Is that a graphic novel?
It was a sort of like an art book collection book of his stories.
Nice. Where'd Tim Sale go?
I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, TV? I assume all these people moved on to something that was more lucrative and possibly easier, which is probably almost anything. And then the other show was the Book of the Month, A Treasury of 20th Century Murder, The Lindbergh Child, by his name is escaping
Rick,
me.
Rick.
Rick. Rick.
I'm giving you this last name starts with G. Rick Geary.
Rick Grinfield.
Rick Grinfield.
Rick Geary. Ron would kill me if he heard me saying that. This is the true crime story of the kidnapping of the Lindbergh child. And you know, if you were around in 1929 or whatever that was,
this
would have been the biggest story. But I actually learned a lot reading this book.
Yeah, it was your book. It was your book of the month.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I thought that would be Ron for sure.
No, that was yours.
Ron is a Rick Geary. I mean, tell me if I use this correctly. He's a Rick Geary stan.
I don't know. Maybe that's the. I'm a huge fan. I bought a ton of his stuff at conventions from him, like his special books. I've got a ton of his books are great.
It's true.
Oh, it's me. If you like the show, if you enjoy this, please consider leaving a star rating or a review, Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you very much. Even better than that is to tell your friends, your family, your coworkers. Now that people return to the office, it's a great time to play it in the office while people are trying to work. Give that a shot, see how that goes.
Get a Bluetooth speaker that you can sort of put anywhere.
And you can hide it.
A hidden place. Yeah. and then here's what you do. You do that, but you play it low.
Right.
Like real low. Like the next day, turn it up a little more. And then later, like full volume, and people will be like, why am I hearing this? But also it seems familiar.
I mean, we've got over 1,200 shows. You could keep this going for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you don't have to. Don't play the same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really good idea. I think that's the kind of thing no HR department would have a problem with.
No, not at all. How could they?
Just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. So listen, this was a rough one. But we got through it. It was a lot of technical problems that you, the listener, hopefully won't notice after the edit, but... We got through it, Josh and I, like troopers.
You have to. What are you going to do?
It is what it is.
What are you going to do? I think this is just fine comic book analysis. You know what? I will say, really enjoyed my books this week, and I did not expect to. I got them quickly, and I was like, I'm really enjoying this. Like, I read extra comics afterwards, and I never do that.
Well, that's good. That's the love of comics.
Yep.
It's shining through.
100%.
All right. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thank you so much. Mostly thank you, Connor, for putting up with that.
And the lights that shine tonight have always been alive. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. Yeah, the lights that shine tonight will burn on when you die. Oh, my soul, 100 million years. And this love between you and I, it's older than that burning ball of fire up in the sky.